Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
Okay, everyone, welcome back for another episode of T-Bone Speaks. I'm your most ungracious host today, and today I have with us a wonderful person and a subject that is not near and dear to my heart, but an actual source of great frustration in my practice. And quite honestly, it's not frustration because I don't have the right people, because I would honestly say that this is where I do have some really good people in my practice, and it's an area where I think I have missed the boat in terms of leadership and showing the need and how important it is for me in my practice. And I'm talking about the hygiene department. And today we have Rachel Wall with us. Rachel, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, T-Bone. Thanks for having me.
You sound Southern today a little bit.
I do. Okay. Well, I've been in California for the last week, so I'm home and I'm just sinking into the Southern drawl.
You're reacclimating to North Carolina.
Yes, exactly. I'm overcompensating.
Well, you know, Rachel, we actually first met in 1999-2000.
We did.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. It is a long time ago. We were first very enthusiastic newbies at SCN.
Yes.
And yeah, it was great. And it's been really fun watching your career soar, and just love all the stuff that you're doing. And I always enjoy being around you because, you know, you always know where you stand with T-Bone.
Why does everybody tell me that?
You know, but you're real. You're very real, and you just put it all out there. And I really like that. I appreciate that.
My favorite thing I just did recently is we did a hot tub video.
Yes.
And my wife says I should watch it, to actually watch it, to see if I'll ever do it again. But there's nothing like four shirtless guys in a hot tub at 1 a.m. shooting a dental video.
There you go. It's real.
It was real.
Can't get more real than that, right?
You can't get. That is very true. So, all right, Rachel. So tell me, who is Rachel Wall, and how and why should our listeners know you?
Yeah, so I'm a hygienist, first and foremost. I've been a hygienist for 25 years now, hard to believe. And I started probably about 13 years ago, I started Inspired Hygiene. And I had been working in the consulting field for a few years before that, and worked on my own as a solo consultant for many years. And then probably about 6 years ago, started to build my team. And so now we are a team of all of our coaches are hygienists, and we have a fantastic supportive team as well here at the home office. And so we just have the privilege of going out and speaking at, you know, most or all of the major meetings between all of us, and a lot of local study clubs and things like that, and just sharing ways that dentists and hygienists and really the entire team can help grow the practice through hygiene. And then we also do private coaching where we go out into practices and help practices customize a program for them that really helps them grow in the way that works best for their practice and really tap into the potential of what's lying there as far as growth potential and hygiene. And so I've coined a term. This, I'm going to put this public now. First on T-Bone Speaks is I've coined this term return on hygiene. And I just wrote a book and we'll share a little bit more about that as we chat. But this kind of, we're going to peek into a little bit in this book and it looks, you know, at where those potentials lie. And so you shared some frustrations and things that are happening in your practice with me several years ago. And then again, we've talked about them recently. So if you could just kind of lead us into that,
sure,
then I'll,
Yeah, you know, I think, I think, like you said, I'm honest and open and sometimes too open. My wife calls it verbal diarrhea, but, you know, I think one of the things that drives me crazy is when I hear dentists say, well, hygiene is a loss leader, like it's, like it's bread or milk or something.
Yes.
At the grocery store. And I don't look at hygiene at like that at all. In fact, I would say that hygiene is quite honestly one of the most important, if not the most important part of your practice, because 70% of, at least in our practice, 70 to 80% of the work that we do comes through our hygiene department, at least on the restorative side. And so when you have great, well-trained hygienists, I think that's unbelievably important to have. And so one of my major focus over in 15 years of practicing has been always been, I have my hygienist focus on me and my needs and my patient's needs with me. And what that's done is it's taken a de-emphasis on their needs in terms of the perio numbers and the perio treatment and some of those things. And that doesn't mean that we're not diagnosing, because I don't want to believe that we're doing substandard care. What I call it is we're miscoding. I know that we're treating perio. I know it because I go in there and I see the 2x2s, the bloody 2x2s.
Yes.
So I know we're treating perio. I just know that we're not coding it correctly. And so as we've developed our practice and as our practice is moving into different phases, I'd like to see our hygiene team perform at the same level that our practice is performing at, where they're in the top 10% of practices nationwide. And and a lot of us give excuses. And my excuse has been, one is I've always had them focus on my stuff only. So that's been my excuse. I've always said things like, well, I don't care about the perio numbers as long as they keep me busy and as long as we treat patients properly. By that mean, who cares if I call it a prophy and do perio? That's just a money issue, correct? So as long as the overall practice numbers are fine, I'll take a little bit of a hit there. And then the other thing I say is, well, you know, I hear Rachel, I hear so many other people talk about great hygiene numbers. And I go, well, you know, in fee-for-service environment, that's fine. But in a PPO environment like mine, where we take multiple PPO network insurances, and they certainly limit or suppress your fees, you know, I think that's an easy excuse to make. And quite frankly, I don't want to have that excuse anymore. I want us to focus on being a top 10% hygiene department, because I have top 1% people.
Sure.
And we have a top 1% practice and we have a top 1% technology. So let's start making the hygiene department itself that way as well.
And that's something that we see a lot in practices that we work with, because, you know, all of us that are out there presenting and speaking and working with practices and the doctors that come to your seminars, T-Bone, you know, we come to think of them as the average dental practice, but they're really not.
They're really not.
It's just because we are fortunate enough to work, you know, with these professionals that want to continue getting better and better. It becomes our normal, but it's not the average, right? These are, like you said, the top 10 or less percent of the dental practices out there. And so what we see a lot is we see the dentists have gone to your course. They've gone to Spear. They've gone to LVI. They've done all of this additional education. And at some point in their career, like sounds like maybe you've reached that point, is they look back and they say, okay, so I'm practicing here, right? And maybe in 2017, I'm practicing a year or two ahead of where most of the other practices are. And or maybe a decade ahead of where a lot of other practices are, but my hygiene team is still, you know, back in 1999. And so, yeah. And so how do I bring them up to speed with technology? How do I bring them up to speed with their service mix? How do I bring them up to speed with the profitability piece? Right. And that's really where we come in and help and see, okay, where do you want to be? What is your practice model? How can we help you tap into that level of growth? So that's common. And, you know, we've had some heart-to-heart leadership conversations with dentists. Yeah, I remember one client here in the Charlotte area that I had to say, hey, you know, here, can I give you some coaching? And, you know, this particular doctor was using the next version, the version of CRAC that hadn't even been released yet. And I said, so you're using this type of technology and your hygienists are using ultrasonic units that are from the 1990s.
Well, or they could be like me. Like me 3 years ago, we were using Chinese ultrasonic units.
Yeah. I remember you and I having a conversation about that.
So. That's like, but see, Rachel, I don't mind you calling me out on the thing on this, okay? Because that's okay, because I want people to know that, you know, we all make these silly mistakes sometimes.
Yeah.
And, sure. Yeah, so you know, but it hurt my feelings. But you know, we got to get challenged sometimes. We got to get disrupted.
Absolutely.
And there honestly is a difference. And you know, I would never use inferior product or things in my end of things. But so why should I expect my hygienist to do it? Just like the same with instruments. Like my hygienist came to me the other day and said, "Hey, it's been X number of years since we've gotten new instruments." I'm like, "Can't you just resharpen them again?" She goes, "When's the last time you resharpened one of your instruments?"
Burr. Right. It's like using a dull burr. Right. So this dentist took that advice and that coaching very well and immediately, you know, updated the equipment that they had, because truly they were operating with subpar equipment. And that's one of the things that the hygienists appreciate about, you know, when we come in is we're looking at how can we maximize the department, but also how can we create a return for them, for the provider, right? So it creates a more optimal working environment, because then your hygienists are going to be happier and they're going to be more loyal and they're going to want to help build the practice. So it has to be a win for the patient, for the practice, and for the provider. So you sent me some questions. So we're going to go through some of these questions, but to start out, let's just look at kind of the two classic hygiene benchmarks and where the rubber meets the road. And when you speak about being disruptive, you know, this influx of PPO participation is, to be quite honest, is a little bit disruptive for us, because, you know, we've worked a lot with, in the past, with a lot of fee-for-service practices. You know, it's very easy. You know, we teach them to do X, Y, Z. They do it. They see a huge, great return. And as we're working with more and more practices that are participating heavily in PPOs and more small group practices, we recognize, hey, like, we've got to look at this and we've got to figure out what is the most creative, you know, most effective way to help these practices. And we're constantly learning that, right? With every client, you know, we're learning something new. And with every seminar we take and an insurance program that we listen to, you know, we refer to the gurus for all of the, you know, ins and outs of all of the coding, but there's some basic things that we have to know and teach and ways to maximize, you know, what you're doing to make it profitable. Because the bottom line is, you know, from business, between business owner and business owner, you know, the profitability of your business measures, that's the measure of longevity for any business, really.
Yeah.
You and know, so, it, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, you know, I had a nice conversation with Megan, my hygienist, and she was asking me about some things. And I said, "Listen, Megan, I'm happy to do anything you want at the end of the day. And here's what we got to do to get there." And what's amazing is, so for the hygienists that may be listening to our podcast, and I encourage dentists to have their teammates and their team members to listen to it, is I say, if you don't have the right equipment, it may be a financial situation where the practice really can't afford it, or the practice doesn't see the value in it. Mm-hmm. And see, what I always tell people, what I believe in is that you should never allow, you should never allow someone else to dictate your future. So that means if you're working in a practice, and I'm not saying leave your practice, although sometimes that's a choice.
Yeah.
Okay. But just because you're working in a practice, like in my practice, my focus is on so many different things, so many much, honestly, and I don't mean this demeaningly, but so many much higher level things now that I tell Megan, I say, "Megan, don't let me and my focus not being on you hold you back."
Yeah.
You know, so if you come up with something, if you say, hey, I want to implement this.
Yeah.
Don't wait on me.
Yeah.
You know, take the initiative, make it happen and see, you know, and then show me. So I use the word sell me on it. I mean,
yeah.
Because I'm a business person at the end of the day. You know, if you want a new XYZ, you know, tell me what's in it for me. What's in it for you? What is it going to take? How much does it cost? How long before we can, you know, get the recoup on that? And what's in it for the patient, certainly, and what's in it for the practice? But hey, I want to do one thing before we move forward. Okay, mm-hmm. So and I want to try to establish some realistic goals here. Okay. So what would you say? I call it knowing the score. What would you say a current hygienist in a typical PPO practice does per day in an 8-hour day right now?
Yeah. Okay. So that's exactly where I was going is looking at this profitability. So I would say, you know, we still set the, when people say, what should our hygienist be producing? We still have the, you know, at least $1,000 to $1,200 a day.
That's our established, that's establishing our goal.
Yeah. That's establishing our goal. Obviously there are going to be practices that are on both ends of those spectrums. And we're going to actually go through some math in just a minute.
And that math is on my practice, right?
Yeah, it is. It is on your practice.
That's an open book. But what do you think most practices are at when they, you know, in general?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Yeah, I would say they're probably at more like 800 to 900 a day in PPO practices.
Okay.
Is where I would say they probably are. And your fees and your reimbursements are very typical. So this is going to apply to a lot of practices. They're in the same situation as you.
If you don't mind, I want to focus our talk today on the PPO practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to focus on, I call it the do-it-yourself model. Okay, let's give them some tips and tricks. Yeah. And then the other thing I want to do is I want to set a couple of groundwork here for people. Okay, because this is another thing that irks me about dentistry. I call it the male member contest, okay? When we use production numbers, we're talking about adjusted production, okay? We're not talking about these fake numbers.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, my practice produces $10 million a year and we collect like 5 cents,
right?
Okay? Because I charge $5,000 for a crown, but my insurance company allows $600. So when we say $800 to $900, these are collectible dollars.
Yes.
These are adjusted numbers for your insurance allowables. And when we're saying $1,000 to $1,200, that again also is your adjusted production.
Yes.
So what you could expect to collect. And so by doing some quick Indian math.
Yes.
So that works out to be about $125 to about $140 an hour.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you're at $800 a day, you're at about $100 an hour. And your question for me was frustrating situation where a practice is contracted with lots of PPOs. This is the primary form of payment for their patients, and they get stuck at $85 to $95 an hour.
Right.
How do we get out of that? So the questions are that we're going to go through is what causes this? What can we do about it? You know, how do we expand our services without it negatively affecting your side of the practice, right? So taking the hygienist's focus away from helping fill your book, because this 70% to 80% that's coming from hygiene is fantastic. You know, our benchmark is at least 60%. of restorative should be coming out of hygiene. And that supports the concept that if hygiene is the backbone of the practice, like we've heard for so many years, then they got to be the backbone. They've got to pull the weight in, you know, helping fill the doctor's restorative book. And then next is, you know, how does a dentist go about implementing an effective plan to overcome the problem? And how do you know you're making progress? So that's what we'll go through today. So yes, we're going to be talking in real numbers. This is net production. This is collectible production. And so if we go back and just start with the profitability piece, you know, our classic benchmark is that hygienists should be producing at least three times their compensation. So I don't know that we have answered this question in the industry as to whether these benchmarks still apply in a heavy PPO practice. But in my opinion, you still have to be profitable, right? I mean, that's the measure of longevity for any business is the profitability point. And so that's a goal that we still need to strive for. Now we're going to look at some variances around that in just a few minutes, but I don't think there's anything wrong with continuing to strive for at least three times hygiene compensation being that net production. Okay. So if your hygienists are making, you know, $35 an hour, then that net production should be $105 per hour or more. Okay.
Gotcha.
So what causes this? What causes the getting stuck at $85 to $95 an hour? And in my opinion, it's really a conflict between philosophy, standard of care, and basic math, right? So you want your hygienist to have the time to deliver the high-level care. So how much time does Megan have with a re-care patient typically?
60 minutes.
Okay, so you want her to have the time to A, deliver high-level care, and B, to help promote your dentistry, right, and help the patients want the dentistry that you're offering.
But you know, Rachel, it's never enough time.
Right. And so here we're going to get to that. Okay? So don't let me forget that. Okay. You want to preserve the amount of time they have, right, to identify, co-diagnose disease, present treatment,
right,
and you're a participating provider in several plans, which limits, right, the amount that you'll be reimbursed. So let's just look at the math here. Let's look at this example. So your fee, we're just going to start with some just basic hygiene codes here. So the Profi code, the 1110, right? Your practice fee is $95 and your lowest reimbursing is, and we're not going to name the insurance companies, that insurance company that shall remain unnamed,
MetLife.
Their fee is, I think this is a six.
Yeah, probably.
$67. Yeah. Okay. It looks like it's $67. All right. So, and then the exam is, your fee is $70. Their fee is $53. And then let's say four bite wings, their fee is $41.
No, that's a comp exam.
No, according to what they sent me, it says $53 for the exam.
For the periodic?
Yeah. For the periodic.
That's incorrect. I know that's incorrect. So they gave you the wrong number. That's the comp exam, but that's okay.
And that's okay because it doesn't really matter when we're talking about hygiene production. And here's something
Good. I wanted to clarify that as well.
So here's something we've changed our opinion about is that we used to have the exam included in hygiene production because really and truly, if your hygienists are promoting and enrolling 70 to 80% of your restorative, then they're probably doing 70 to 80% of the exam, right?
I want them to do 99% of
the
exam, Rachel.
Right. So, and the best hygienists do that. And it's frustrating for hygienists for them to do all that work and it not be credited towards their production. But what we've had to realize is that those exams, that is a doctor procedure.
Legally,
it has to be billed to the doctor. And for you to do all the quirky math to work that back into their numbers. I mean, some practices choose to do that, but I would say just, you know, set the goal that so that it's realistic and takes that into account. So really and truly, whether that's your comp exam or your periodic exam reimbursement, it doesn't make any difference when we're talking about, you know, hygiene production. So if we're looking at the lowest reimbursement, is this, if your hygienist is doing a Profi and four bite wings, she's going to be billing out $108 in that hour, right? So that's better than the 85 to 95, but not much.
No.
Right. And so then if she continues to do that appointment after appointment after appointment, then, you know, it's going to be pretty hard for you to hit that $125 an hour.
Right? And we're not doing bite wings in every appointment. Let's call that every other appointment, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And then you throw in a missed appointment here, and then all of a sudden now you're down to that $85 to $95 an hour. So it's really just basic math. And so we have to look at, okay, how do we get that up? And so you have a few choices here, you know, and we're going to kind of jump around a little bit because we'll go back and forth as things kind of just naturally come together. But what do we do about it? So we can expand our services, right? We could offer things like we could tighten up our perio program so that she's not doing the bloody profies, because by the way, the bloody profies are one of the reasons why it feels like there's never enough time.
Yes.
So, right. So if that profie expands, and one of the things I talk about is I do a course on hygiene time management that's actually really fun because we get to talk about the things that, you know, we couldn't do in hygiene school. Like, you know, I show a picture of a before and after a stain patient. Well, you know, you're not in hygiene school, and if there's a speck of stain there, but yet you're able to present treatment that's in the patient's best interest, then maybe we need to leave the speck of stain and move on to more important things, right?
Exactly.
So what we find is that, you know, there's this thing called Parkinson's Law, and it says that a task will expand based on the time that is allowed. So if we allow 45 out of our 60 minutes for scaling, then a lot of times a hygienist is going to do 45 minutes of scaling. And that is where this time crunch comes in very often, not always, but very often, is looking at how much time am I spending on scaling. And if we're doing a lot of bloody profies, then a lot of times it takes longer than it should. And so one of our benchmarks and things that you can take back and just kind of measure is if you're spending more than 20 to 25 minutes on the scale and polish, that patient probably needs something other than a profie. They may need two profies, or maybe they need periotherapy. But that's a good benchmark. If they're spending, if you are as a hygienist, or if you're a hygienist, if you're a dentist or a office manager, spending more than 20, 25 minutes on that piece, then that patient probably needs something other than a prophy. And so what that means is then we must allow 20 minutes or so in the beginning of the exam, the hygiene appointment, before we start scaling, to really do our exam. Right. That's where all of that happens, is in that first 20 minutes is, you know, what is the perio status? What is their restorative status? What opportunities are there for the patient to get healthier? What have we presented in the past that the patient hasn't moved forward with yet? So when we look at what can we do about it, you know, one of the things we can do about it is expanding hygiene services so that we're offering higher level services in that same amount of time. And it can be the typical things, right? Increasing perio, fluoride therapy where it's appropriate, sealants if that fits your philosophy, products, although you have cost of products, so there's not a huge margin on products, but certainly that can help. The other option is decreasing hygiene appointment time. I mean, you know, the downsides of that are the conversation we just had, right? There's never enough time, and we want to make sure that our hygienists are doing the things they need to do to help build your side of the practice. One thing you can do about it is drop your lowest reimbursing plan. Well, we had a client years ago that was in West Virginia, and they were on a very similar plan to this, and 40% of their patients were in that one plan, and they were bumping up against a capacity issue. Their hygienist was very busy, and they were considering adding another hygienist. And at this time, that plan was reimbursing $37 for a 4342, which is a localized quadrant of scaling root planning. I'm not exaggerating. And I said, you know, you can add another hygienist, but you're just going to go deeper into the hole.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense because, you know, he was paying his hygienist at least $30 an hour. So you're in the negative, right? That $7 an hour, if she were to spend an hour on that particular procedure, is not even covering the overhead, you know, aside from her compensation. So, you know, look at those things like that. You know, what are we looking at as far as capacity goes? Are we maxed out, and is it going to be profitable to add a hygienist, or does it make more sense to make the decision to drop a plan? And again, we refer to the pros on that when we see that that's an option. We refer to a couple different groups to analyze that, because that's a big business decision and you need to have all the facts before you do that. You know, one of the other things that you can do is, adjust your compensation model, right? Maybe pay your hygienist a base plus a percentage of whatever they hit over that 3-to-1. And that is based on net production again. The other choice that you have is just like, and probably like you've done in the past, is accept the lower profitability on the direct billable services and really empower your team to help build the other side of your practice, right? That's been your model, mm-hmm. In the past. And then, you asked about comp exams, and these, like we just said before, that might increase your doctor exam production, but it won't increase the hygiene production. So let's go back to the math here. And if we look at a morning, where Megan maybe is seeing a prophy and bite wings at 8 o'clock, a prophy and bite wings at 9, then she's doing a perio maintenance, and then maybe she has 2 quads of therapy. Well, even with 2 quads of therapy in there, if she's doing, we picked the lowest reimbursing. We're going to pick the $43.42, which this plan is reimbursing at $102. So if she schedules those 2 quads, an hour per quad, then you're never going to get to your goal. So the other piece of this is, how do we get creative in our scheduling while still preserving the time to do things the right way? And so, what I would do with you, Tarun, is I would say, okay, let's look at this. Could she do, if we say we've got 2 quads of 43.42, could we do 2 quads of that in 1 hour? Right now, all of a sudden, she's doing $204 in that 1 hour, and that can help carry the production that's not there for the other hours. So you've just got to really template your schedule, and you've got to really agree with your team on what can we do to still deliver a high level of care, but get creative with the scheduling. And that's one thing that you can do is say, hey, if we're doing 2 quads of 43.42, then we're going to do that in 1 hour.
So I want to go back on a couple of things that you talked about here. So there's a couple of things that we have found in the last few months to be helpful in our practice is we focused on fluoride therapy on adults.
Yes.
Okay, so that's helped us quite a bit because I don't know what the fee is, 10, 15, 20 bucks, whatever the dollar amount is. But if you can get 70, 80% conversion, suddenly you go from that $75, $85, $95 per hour per visit, and now suddenly you're bumping that up to the $100+ per visit. And I yes. think fluoride is a significantly underutilized service in the practice. And it's honestly a very, very good service to provide patients. So so I want us to come back to some verbal skills on how we get hygienists to do fluoride to get them to understand, because we went through that struggle a little bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because they're like, now I feel like I'm selling fluoride.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to feel like they're selling anything. I'm anti-products just personally, because there's Amazon, for God's sakes. So I'm anti-decreasing hygiene time, because I think the relationship is way more important than a little bit of hygiene production, because the way I look at it is, if my hygienist can produce 1 crown for me because I gave her an extra 10 minutes or 15 minutes per patient, that's like her whole entire day. So, and the dropping insurance plan, that's a yeah but for anybody listening. They're going to be like, yeah, I can't do that. It doesn't work in my area. And then mm-hmm. this comp exam thing, yes, you're right. It doesn't help hygiene production, but it helps office production.
Yeah.
And this was an area that I forgot about, and it's amazing how we forget about things. So I was trained to believe that comp exams were only for new patients.
Yeah, right.
And the truth is a comp exam can be done every 3 to 5 years, but based on your insurance carrier, and should be done every 3 to 5 years. So one of the things that we've worked on in our practice is setting up a recall schedule within, within your practice management software to remind you when your patient is due for a comp exam. Just right. You can set up every 6 months to do for a perio, a prophy or whatever. You can set up that they're due for, I don't know, for 150, whatever the number may
yes.
be. For the comp exam every 3 to 5 years. So that way, because that's extra 20 bucks, right? I mean, last time I checked, if you do an extra 50 of those or 100, 200 of those a year, that adds up, it makes a difference. So, but I want to come back to, I think the, because it sounds so easy to stop doing bloody prophies. Okay.
Yep.
But why is it so hard, Rachel? Why is it so hard to just stop doing them? Why is it so hard to have the verbal skills to tell patients that you've been seeing for so long? Or maybe you're a new hygienist that's walking into a practice, and then you're inheriting patients, and you don't want to be the bad guy or girl that has to tell somebody this stuff. So tell me what are the, how do we overcome some of that stuff?
Mm-hmm. So here's what we found. And I want to go back to this math in just a minute, because it's going to tie it all together. Is, so you first brought up fluoride therapy, and now we're talking about the bloody prophies, and the things that the thing that those two items have in common is that they can increase production. And we can say, because what I calculated here as we were talking was, you know, adding two fluoride therapies to this morning that we just did would actually get us to goal. And we'll go through that in detail in just a second. However, what we consultants have been guilty of is just that, is saying, okay, all you need is two more fluoride therapies a morning, you know, and you can get to goal. And that works for a little while. But what we find is it doesn't result in long lasting change. And here's the reason, is because we're starting with production in mind instead of starting with the why. And it sounds kind of, you know, fluffy and all that, but it's really true, is that the majority of the folks in our practice, thankfully, are very ethical. And we want to do things that are in our patient's best interest. And if we ever do things that feel kind of icky, which is doing treatments that are focused on production, then we might do it for a little while, but we're not going to be able to sustain that, because it doesn't feel right. So with anything that we're introducing, you know, all the technology that you've introduced in your practice and that you teach, you always go back to, okay, how does this help the patient? How does this result in a better restorative outcome? Right? How does this either help me do this faster, so the patient doesn't have to be in the chair longer? There's got to be a return for the patient here, and we got to focus on that first. So we first have to look at why. Why should we even do anything differently aside from the production piece? And part of it is because we could do a bloody prophy, and we may feel like we're treating the perio, but our patient doesn't know it. And I can tell you, I've met, you know, practices where they've been called before the board and they did therapy on the patient and the patient didn't even know it. And so we've got to make sure that we're communicating to our patients really clearly on what is really happening with their health. And we have to spend some time, whether it's with the fluoride therapy or whether it's bumping up our perio, we got to spend some time really focusing with our team on why. What is the return for the patient if we do this? And why is this in our patient's best interest? And how is this going to help the patient have better oral health? How's it going to help them have better overall health? How's it going to save them, you know, money in the long run, as far as reduced risk for decay and things like that? We have to focus on that and then go to the production piece. So if we have that belief in place, and we've worked on that, and that's one of the things we do very specifically and right away with our clients, is we got to establish a belief, then the verbal skills are easier.
Because it's coming from the heart.
Right. Because if it's coming from a production standpoint, then all of a sudden we got to create all these weird, these things, right things to say and all of that. And it feels kind of phony. But if it's coming from the heart, then we can use some key words and it just goes so much smoother. And the patients can tell that we have their best interest at heart. So a couple things that just really quick kind of verbal things that we have found work really well with practices, whether it's a new hygienist, or whether it's an existing hygienist with a long-term patient, is, you know, just like with anything, if we want to get a different result, we've got to take some different action. And so a lot of times the hygienists feel like, well, gosh, I've been doing these prophies forever, and now all of a sudden I'm recommending therapy. But that's not true 95% of the time. 95% of the time, what's true is they've been talking to the patient about the bleeding, right? They've been, you know, recommending a different oral care device. They, you know, they have been shortening their interval. They've done something. They've had some discussion with the patient about this inflammation. And so go back to that, right? You've already planted the seed. Go back to the seed you planted and say, look, we've talked about XYZ and we're not getting, your body's not responding the way we had hoped. And it's time to do something different. So basically, go back to all those seeds you've planted. It's not a new conversation. You're just now going to be presenting a new solution to the problem. But let's look back at this problem that we've discussed over several recare visits, and it's not getting any better. Your body's not responding the way we had hoped. It's time to do something different. and now you, and you present them with the evidence, right? You bring the patient alongside you, just like with, you know, the intraoral camera, the patient is seeing the problem. We can do the same thing with perio, right? We can take photos, you know, we can call out those numbers. We can bring the patient alongside us rather than waiting till the end of the appointment and then dropping the bomb, so that they are getting a picture of the problem and then we can offer that solution. And the same thing is true with fluoride is, you know, talk to them about what is the problem. The problem is, you know, they've invested all of this, you know, time and energy and money into this beautiful restorative work. And the problem is those bacteria are still there, right? They still have a risk for decay. So what can we do to reduce the risk? Or the problem is they have exposed root surface and that root surface is, you know, 7 times softer than enamel. And the bacteria are still there. What can we do to reduce the risk of that decaying? And so it being the solution rather than being, you know, us trying to sell them something.
So would you say that, one of the things that we did with the hygienist is I said, let's identify candidates for fluoride therapy.
Yeah.
And I said, basically, to me, it's very simple. Any patient that has recession is a candidate for fluoride therapy. And any patient that has restorations is a candidate for fluoride
95% of your patients.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you look at it that way, and to me, the cell, quote unquote cell, and I, you know, we all hate that word, but at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. Okay.
Right.
The cell is Mrs. Jones. You know, we'd like to add a protection layer to your teeth to help protect you from needing more expensive dental care down the road. Okay. And look, I'm a jokester in my practice. And I tell my patients, listen, it's like a cheap insurance policy. You can pay me hundreds later, or you can spend a few dollars now. You know, it's whichever one they prefer. And I think ultimately you got to find your own way. That's why I don't believe in scripts, which is probably part of my problem.
Yep.
but
no, I don't think it's part of the problem. I mean, we feel the same way. It has to come from the heart. And then you have some key words, which is what you just said. So you have a script, but it's one that feels natural. It's not one that's been, you know, pushed on you. You know, you have to say it this way.
Right. And so I find that the fluoride, it just drives me nuts when we're not providing fluoride because it is easy. And honestly, to me, you know, we can, you know, like I go back and forth with my hygienist or with some of the team members, like, man, you're doing it too, or like say my reps even, they're like, you're doing it too cheap. I'm like, what's too cheap? It costs you like $2 or whatever the little
$2.
Stuff. Yeah, that's
yes.
What it costs you, right? And so charge your patient $10, $15. Make it, you know, if the thing with your hygienist is going to be that they're so worried about how much you're charging for it, then make it affordable so that they're comfortable
right.
with it, because it should be about the patient. So don't make it $30. I mean, to me, that's highway, in my opinion, that's highway robbery to paint some $2 fluoride on their teeth. Okay. But make it affordable for them, because that's really good treatment for them.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah, I agree. And that was one thing that came to mind for me is make sure your pricing is set where it's easy for your team to recommend it. And so, yeah, $15. I mean, it's still your, it's, yeah, I completely agree with you on that. And what I would say is, just to add to it, is just make sure you're making it personal. You know, so often we kind of get in this robotic mode of, you know, well, you're due for your x-rays or you're due for fluoride. Is patients don't care about what they're due for. They don't want to be put into our, like, standard, right? They want it to be because it makes sense to them.
Rachel, so, I listened to a lady speak. I shouldn't say lady. I listened to somebody speaking one day, and
you did say lady.
But I didn't mean it that way. Okay. And okay. But it happened to be a lady. Okay. And she said, I just happened to ask her about this fluoride thing. She says, you should have a thing at the front desk and your patients to check off if they want fluoride or not. And then their hygienist will know if they want fluoride. I'm like, no person in their right mind is going to check off that they want fluoride. I mean, that's the most impersonal thing I've ever, like, so I'm not going to check off that I, that's like me when I go to the car wash place saying, I want to check off that I want detailing on my car because I'm never going to do it. I mean,
well, right. And that, so that goes to my next comment, which was going to be, don't ask the patients if they want it, right? Assume, because I hear this too, is do you want this? No, I don't want this. I want to get in and out of here as fast as possible and do the minimum. Instead is assuming, right, based on what their risk is, right? So if you have a patient that has zero decay and has zero recession, has zero restorations, then they really have very, very low risk for decay. And so it is that in their best interest, but the rest of the 95% of your patients is make it personal, right? Make it make sense to them. Just like you said, you know, I was just going to bring up, I was listening to your podcast that you did with your friend that's the insurance advisor.
Mark,
you know, you don't go in saying, Mark, I want to give you, you know, $500 a month to insure me. But Mark creates the value because it's protecting all these investments and your family and all of those things like that. So I love that analogy. I think that's perfect.
And it comes from trust, right?
It does. And you're being authentic, which is you. And we really should all be comfortable being ourselves and being real with our patients and saying, here's the thing, like you've invested a lot. You spent a lot of time here. We want to help you protect that. So it's $15 now, or if you have to replace this crown, it's another, you know, $500.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just doesn't, right, it doesn't make sense. So here's where the math comes in is, you know, if we look at your hygienist schedule and we look at Prophy and Bite Wings, a perio maintenance, two quads of a localized perio therapy in an hour, and then another Prophy with no bite wings, just $67 Prophy. If you threw in three fluoride therapies in those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 patients, all of a sudden you're at the $125 an hour. Now, is that an ideal day? Yeah, it is an ideal day. But we're also using your lowest reimbursing fee. So you've got, you know, one.
And right now I'd take it.
You've got eight other plans.
I'd take it.
Right. You've got, well, I would say you've got 6 to 8 other plans that reimburse higher than this. So chances are you're going to hit that. So let's look at, yeah. So if we can, let's look at, you know, just kind of the next question about expanding services. How do we focus on increasing perio without it negatively affecting the restorative?
Yeah. So my concern in that is that suddenly we so focus so much on perio. Like I had one hygienist, okay. And she was, her perio numbers were off the chart, but I never got any work out of her operatory. Like all her patients, like all they did was perio. And actually a lot of those patients didn't like our practice very much afterwards. I think she was selling them, to be quite honest with you, or they perceived she was very selling them.
Okay. So first and foremost is you've got to really establish your philosophy strongly with your team. And, you know, with, you know, Megan's been with you for a long time. And she has shown, you know, how great she is at helping you enroll restorative. And so she understands your philosophy. And so chances are she's going to be able to balance this really well. You know, with your newer hygienist, it's going to be really important for you to just really express, you know, what your philosophy is around this and look at when is it appropriate for perio to take the front seat. And when is it appropriate for it to take the back seat, right? Because the bottom line is the non-negotiables are that we have to identify and co-diagnose disease and present treatment to address the disease. We have to do that. And so that's probably an area where you could really grow things as far as, like you said, you don't feel like there's untreated perio, but it's being treated in the bloody prophy, which means they may or may not have the time to appropriately address the problem and also to educate the patient into what's happening and so that they're very aware. So
I call it approval addiction.
So you said it was okay. Tell me about that.
So I think what happens is it's easier for people to do bloody prophys because patients will just say yes to you versus having to get up and sit down and tell them that they have gum disease or that they need something different. I think that's what I really think it boils down to, because I think A, we perioprobe our patients. Okay. So we're not a practice that doesn't probe. Okay.
Right.
So I think really boils down to having those uncomfortable conversations. And I think that's really, really where the problem lies in most practices out there, is not that the patients don't exist, because that's total garbage. Okay. And it's not that the patients don't want to be healthy, because I believe that's total garbage. I think it's more that our team members or us ourselves, you know, because I'm just as guilty, if not more guilty than my hygienists of this, is we just want to do what makes it easy for the patients. And what's easy for the patients is just to keep doing what we've always done.
Yeah. But it's not always what's in the patient's best interest. Now, sometimes it may, you know, sometimes it may be, but sometimes it may not be. And I think that's an interesting theory. And I would say it goes back to the conversation of really focusing on the why, because what has to happen is our conviction to help the patients get healthier and our conviction that this is in our best patient's best interest has to be stronger than the uncomfortable feeling that we have when we're about to have this conversation. We've got to shift the balance.
I think sometimes as a practice leader, whether, and I say leader, not as the owner, I'm the owner, but whether you're an owner or not, as a practice leader, even if you're the hygiene leader, I think sometimes you have to draw a line in the sand and like on some patients where, you know what, we can't do prophys anymore. We can't say, you know what, next time, if it's this way, then you have to do this, right? And I've heard this before, right? So next time, okay, Mrs. Jones, next time it's this way, but the next time it's the next time, right? And at some point you have to draw the line in the sand and say, Mrs. Jones, we no longer can accept to neglect what's going on here. If you can't, you know, and it's so hard, and I get it, is if we can't do this, then maybe this isn't the right dental home for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are times that conversation comes, but again, it's the, you know, that's a small percentage of your patients that happens with. So we're.
But I think that sends a message sometimes. It lets your team know that you're serious, that you're willing to say, you know what, that in other words, that the production isn't that important. In other words, that I'm willing to do whatever the patient wants versus what's right. So.
Right. So, okay. So first is getting really clear with your entire team on your philosophy about what comes first. And it's not always black and white, but give them some really clear guidelines. Here are some questions that you can ask when you're going through this with your team is, you know, what are the patient's medical risk factors, right? Because that can play a huge role in what comes first. If you're dealing with a diabetic patient, you know, and obviously we're going to use a very obvious example, but this can also become very subtle. And, you know, you start with the obvious cases and then you refine your skills to where you're looking at this more closely with other folks. But if you've got a diabetic patient that has even some localized, you know, bleeding 4 to 5 millimeter pocket depths with bone loss, and you're looking at doing restorative, it probably would be in the best interest of that patient to get that inflammation cleared before you start restorative, because you're depending on that strong foundation to hold and for them to have good healing overall. So what are the patient's medical risk factors? Does the presence of the disease affect the risk factors and vice versa? Are there imminent emergencies, right? The imminent emergencies take precedence. And does the patient have a specific concern that might direct our first course of action? So, you know, is the patient having a toothache? Well, I mean, again, this sounds super obvious, but it's worth saying is, because with hygienists, sometimes, like you said, they can get blinders on and get so focused on the perio. It's like, yes, but the patient's having a problem here that we need to address. And if we don't address that, then we're not going to gain the patient's trust. So sometimes planting the seed, you know, helps with trust. And we've been working with this one client and they kind of had the philosophy of, well, we're going to present the perio, even with new patients, we're going to present the perio. And if they don't go for it, then we're just not going to schedule them for anything. Well, that patient is not going to call you up and say, you know, I know you wouldn't do any treatment on me last time. I really want to do that perio therapy so that I can come and be a patient. They're not going to do that. And they're not going to call another dental office. They're going to now go into the dental twilight zone again for another 5 years. And that's not in anybody's best interest either. So we had to work together because they had a real hard time understanding how I can say, okay, so, you know, you're not ready to move forward with this treatment. What's the next step so we can at least keep that patient engaged in our practice and build trust with them, right? Get them to know us. What can we do that's not going to compromise their treatment, but it's going to be at least one little baby step to get them moving forward? You know, that might be bringing them back for an above the gum line prophy. And I know that that sounds kind of crazy to some people, but again, if we send the patient off into, you know, back into their world, they're not going to get engaged with another dentist right away. They're going to be, you know, in a state of neglect again for several years. So as you're going through this philosophy, look at some cases, you know, pull some cases. I remember we had a patient that had, I would say, beginning to moderate periodontal disease, pretty generalized, but she was very young. She had 6 teeth that were decayed at the gum line. So, you know, that's an imminent emergency. So what we did first is she had to have all those teeth removed and have that risk of infection reduced. Then we could go back and we could look at, you know, the perio. So you've got to decide what are the priorities and what takes precedence. And that's going to be specific to your philosophy. That's the first step.
Okay.
The second step is really having kind of a decision tree and making sure that your hygienists are spending the time before they start scaling on this exam process, right? So they're not starting the scaling 5 minutes after the patient sits down. So that's something to look at is what are we doing before scaling starts? Because we really got to know what we're dealing with before we can decide what procedure is being delivered that day. So, you know, the worst thing is for a hygienist to get halfway through a prophy and realize, oh, shoot, like this patient really needs therapy. And now I've got to backpedal. So let's find out before we start scaling what the needs are and kind of coming up with a decision tree of, okay, so if we see active disease, then, you know, now we're moving and let's look at the restorative needs. What are we seeing with restorative? You know, and if we're seeing this level of disease and this level of restorative, then we're going to move to restorative first. But we always got to make the patient aware that there are other needs. So whether you're going perio first or restorative first, we've got to just let them know there are these other underlying issues that we're going to get to, but we're addressing the most urgent thing. And patients like that, right? How many times have you had a patient say, okay, is this the most important thing first? Or are we just doing this because, you know, this is where doctor wants to start? Like they want to know that the most important problems are being addressed first. So have kind of, you know, go through some cases and go through some scenarios, but make sure the time is there so that the hygienist has an opportunity to go through that mental process and decide, you know, here's what's happening. What I'm expecting is Dr. Agarwal is going to recommend this, or they say there's several issues and I'm really depending on him to help us determine the first priority. So, you know, with new hygienists, that may be your first step is you say, I want you to highlight all the problems and then I'm going to come in and we're going to determine the priorities together. And that's part of your training for them. Whereas with a more seasoned hygienist, they're going to know your philosophy and they're going to know what comes first. Does that make sense? And did that answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Because there are going to be some conditions that you say, we need to address this before we get to the perio. And there are going to be some perio conditions that you say, we need to address this before we get to the restorative. So, and then the next step is as soon as we can, if they're going into perio, then we bring that restorative conversation back up. And it could be that we bring it up in kind of different levels. So maybe they come back, you know, for that first session of perio therapy and we just share with them, hey, next time you come, we're going to also make sure, you know, that we let you know about those cavities that we mentioned and what the first step is with that. And then maybe that's all we say at that first, you know, perio session. And then the second perio session, they come in and then maybe we bring it up, right? And so you got to decide like how fast are we going to move them into perio into restorative once they've gone through perio. So I think part of it is just a general awareness of your philosophy and awareness of from you is, I want to make sure that we're not slowing down this restorative process.
It's interesting you say something about that, Rachel, because one of the things that I think we're very good at is when we see patients with perio and other significant needs, other needs. What I always tell my patients is, listen, first things first, we got to get our foundation straight, which is your gums, get the health of your gums and your bone around your teeth, okay? And then we're going to schedule you for a re-examination, a co-diagnosis. And at that point, we're going to go through tooth by tooth after we've got everything cleaned up so we can see better. And then we'll do a complete, a thorough examination. Now, if they have teeth with big holes in it, stabilization, we'll combine that with perio treatment and get that taken care of as part of stabilization. But so you're right. I think too often what happens is we overwhelm the patient and we start talking about the perio situation and the restorative situation and this situation. And they have, let's say, hey, I want to get my teeth straightened up. And we get excited about the teeth straightening. And then we just suddenly, before you know it, we haven't really given the patient a concrete plan of action.
Right. And then we present them with this giant financial obligation and they're completely overwhelmed. So I love that. I love that approach. And then what you can do is you can combine that tooth by tooth with one of their perio sessions. So again, we want to make it easy for the patient so we're not having to bring them back time after time after time. So let's make it make sense and make it efficient for them. I think that's great.
All right. So we've got a few minutes left here. So I think we're going to make fun of my practice numbers for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
So what kind of bad news you want to tell the listeners?
Well, here's what I want everybody to ask themselves, right? First, I want you to ask yourself, and I'm going to ask you this, and you may not know the answer to this, and that's okay. You can go back and ask your hygienist. First question is, with your existing ReCare patients, so these are the adult prophys, perio maintenance that come into your practice every day, what percentage of those patients would you say have 4 millimeter pocket depths, bleeding, and some even crestal bone loss? What percentage of your patients would you say present with that, existing patients? If you had to guess.
15-20%.
Okay. So let me make sure I said this correct. 4%, 4 millimeters or greater bleeding and bone loss. Okay. 15-20%. All right. Great. And then what about new patients, new adult patients that come in? 4 millimeters or greater bone loss and bleeding.
25%.
Okay. So your numbers are actually a little bit lower than what we typically hear. And
guess.
That doesn't surprise me.
That's my guess.
Yeah. And so go back and ask your hygienist.
I promise you I'm wrong.
No, maybe not, because I know, everybody kind of uses this excuse of, I live in this patient where everybody's educated and nobody has disease.
Yeah, but listen, those are the people, like I probably have perio disease and I'm educated and I have money. Come on.
Right. So we've all seen that. So that's okay, because this is probably what most dentists would say. I would say most hygienists would probably say higher.
Okay.
So what I want everybody to do is go and ask your hygienist these questions. And then what we're going to do is we're going to measure that then against your perio percentage. So your perio percentage in your practice, based on how we at Inspired Hygiene calculate this, is 8%, right? So your perio percentage is a lot lower than what you're saying the, reality of perio is in your practice. Now, every patient that you present therapy to is not going to say yes, right? But if we just looked at your new patients, right? And we're super conservative. So you said 30 to 40 new patients a month. So let's say you have 40 new patients a month and 25% of them have some level of perio. So that's 10 patients, right?
Yeah.
So if you have 10 patients, and then again, let's be conservative. And let's say out of those 10 patients, patients, let's say those 10 patients that have perio, that they need 2 quads of therapy. Okay. Times 2. So now we're up to 20 quads. So that would be a fair estimate to the potential of perio, like low end potential of perio therapy in your practice, based on new patients. And you guys are actually doing about 17 quads a month. So you're pretty close to that. So that means that you're probably pretty good at enrolling your new patients into therapy, right? Because your number matches.
That goes back to approval addiction.
Yeah, right. So you're probably pretty good at that. But what's happening is there's probably very little or no perio being presented to existing patients. So you have another 950 to 1,000 ReCare patients. And there's probably a good percentage. I would say 20%. What we use is 10%. We look at 10%. So if you have 900 patients in ReCare, which I think you actually, based on your numbers, I think you have more.
A bit more, yeah.
Times, I mean, that's another 20 quads a month at least.
And when you say quads, you're talking about 4342 and 4341. It doesn't matter, right?
Right. It doesn't matter. So you could conservatively do double the amount of perio.
Right, which is what I want. Doing. I want us to be at 15 to 20%.
Yes. So you could easily do that.
Do you think this business of being at 30% of hygiene production being perio number, is that realistic?
Yeah, I think it is realistic, but it depends on a lot of things. I mean, remember we're including perio maintenance in that too.
Okay.
So we haven't even talked about that. That's a whole nother thing. But
we can't talk about perio maintenance until we get people enrolled in perio.
Exactly. And you only have probably about 5 patients in perio maintenance
now. I know.
In your whole.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, Rachel.
So that's part of that calculation, and that, but it takes time. So you're not going to go from 8% to 30% in 6 months. Right. You might go from 8% to 30% in 18 months because that includes the perio maintenance. So, yes, it is real. And we have clients that are at that level, but you could easily double and that would help you. So let's look as we wrap up here, because I know we're going a little bit long, but this has been fun. How do you know you're making progress? Right. You have to measure. So, again, going back to that 3-to-1 profitability. So measure that. Right. What is your hygiene, your net production compared to hygiene compensation, right? And that includes, vacation and
taxes,
uniform allowance.
All that nonsense, yeah.
Yeah. So some people put taxes in overhead. Some people put it in compensation. It doesn't matter whichever way you choose to do it. Figure out where you are with that. Open time, that excessive open time obviously can be a huge culprit for profitability. So, is it that you've got a lot of open time? Or is it that your hygiene schedule is packed and you need more available appointments? Is that, and how do you make that profitable? Look at your perio percentage. We say we like to see our practices at 25% or higher, but there needs to be a balance between the SRP and the perio maintenance. You can go to inspiredhygiene.com/perio tool, and you can run your numbers just like I did with Tiva's practice and figure out what your perio percentage is. So it's inspiredhygiene.com/perio tool, T-O-O-L. Looking at your net production, how close are you to that, $1,200 mark, $1,000 a day mark with your net production? And then the other thing that we look at is, ReCare effectiveness. And these are all things that we look at when we do a hygiene analysis. We've done this for you and your practice in the past. But, even if you just pick one of these or two of these to measure and just track it, for several months and just create that awareness with your team and establish the why. If I can give any advice, that's it, is really discuss why is this in our patient's best interest before we discuss how does this increase our production.
So, all right, Rachel, we didn't talk about, there's so much we could have talked about. Jesus, I wrote down so many things. Like,
we can do a part two.
We should, because you just talked about being booked. And then I just said, okay, so if I have a new patient that comes to my office right now, because you know what drives me crazy is when people don't follow the blocks. And then
we fill our
schedule with 8 recalls a day. And then we get a new patient that comes in that needs perio treatment. And now we're working through lunch. We're working late. We're adding days. And then we're creating this whole problem in the practice because we're afraid to diagnose perio because then we're like, where in the hell are we going to put them? There's so many moving parts to this. And I think that's part of the problem there. And I think to me, the biggest thing, if I were to give people a couple of messages, okay, I would say this. I would say number one is you got to know the score of where you're at now in your practice. Okay. And it doesn't matter where you're at in terms of whether it's $1,000 a day, $800 a day, $500 a day, or $2,000 a day. We all want improvement.
Yeah.
And then we can't look and listen to people that say you should be at this number, because getting there takes, as Rachel said, 18 months, 24 months. Every practice is going to be a little bit different. And what you have to do is you have to define how you're going to get there in a stair-step method, okay? And what I would say to you from my perspective, and I've seen our numbers increase, For me, I looked at what are the easiest ways for us to get there. And for me, the easiest non-intrusive ways for us to get there was the first thing we did was we added fluoride therapy to our hygiene department. Okay. Mm-hmm. We started looking at it for adults. Number two, while this didn't help our hygiene numbers, it helped our practice numbers. We started doing comp exams every 3 to 5 years on our patients. Also, that allowed us to actually do a comp exam on patients every 3 to 5 years and reestablish that level of trust and relook at everything and ask those tough questions, ask those overall looking questions with them, which was great. And then I think a couple of other things, and I wish we had more time to talk about it, was the concept of 4-3-4-2, because when I was in school, I don't think that existed. We only had the entire quad, and now we can have localized perio treatment. Okay.
And that's a very underutilized code. So yeah, that's.
And just a quick question on that. If you do a 4-3-4-2, can you do a prophy at the same time?
You can do whatever you want. If you're expecting reimbursement, the answer is no.
Okay, so that's okay. Yeah, because the insurance companies dictate everything. So, okay. And then the other thing I think that's underutilized, and this is a source of frustration for me as well, is Arestin. Because now Arestin, I used to hate Arestin because I had to buy it and it expired. Now they have the Arestin RX program. So like you don't even have to buy this stuff. You just write a prescription for it and the company, your patients will get it prescribed to them and you can just charge a placement fee of 50, 70 bucks, whatever you want to do. It makes it super easy for you and your patients. So we should be utilizing that more. I would say that if you're doing a 45-minute schedule, I would say seriously consider going to a 60-minute schedule on that. And, we utilize this. We don't do hygiene checks at the end of appointments anymore. We try to do our hygiene checks at the 15 to 20-minute mark because we try to break the visit down into three sections, 20, 20, 20. 20 minutes is to do our fact gathering, 20 minutes for the actual prophy, and then 20 minutes for God knows what at the end. I don't even ask anymore. And then the other thing I would say is if your hygienists don't have their own cameras, get them some cameras. Yeah. It's
camera in every operatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what we've done. We put digital SLRs in every operatory in the practice and enough mirrors and retractors to go through the day. So,
and take photos on perio patients, just like you would for prophy patients, because that's going to help your reimbursement. It's going to help with educating the patient. So that's something that a lot of us have never thought of in the past, but yeah. Take pictures of those bleeding gums.
So Rachel, in conclusion, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to learn more about Rachel or get in touch with you or hear you speak or, all of that stuff?
Yeah. So our speaking calendar for all of us at Inspired Hygiene is on our website, which is inspiredhygiene.com. Anybody can email me at rachel@inspiredhygiene.com. And I want to offer to your listeners our book. So this is, we're just releasing, I'm just releasing my first book. It's called ROH, Return on Hygiene. And it really goes into even more detail, T-Bone. I'll send you a copy of this. In some of the things that we discussed, got some cool worksheets and some things that you can do with your team. And it'll be on our website very soon. But for your listeners, if y'all will email us at rachel@inspiredhygiene.com and just put in the subject line book request, then we will send you a book and we'll take care of the shipping. We'll send it to you and the shipping will be on us. And we'd love to share that with your listeners. And thank you so much for having me on
Rachel,
here.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And as an Indian, my listeners will love anything free.
I love it. You're awesome. Thanks everybody for listening and have a super day.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.